Golf Smarter number 111 for January 29, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Getting back into the putting zone with Bob Montello.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf answers questions about a very tall player fitting to the right shaft length, travel bags, shortening your putter, and finding the right loft and bounce on your wedges for specific geographic areas. We'll also make an important announcement and give away that swing-to-step training aid. Our guest today is Bob Montello. Bob is a professional tour coach and private instructor who, for over 35 years, has traveled extensively to play and learn his craft, putting. Bob's also a disciple of Jeff Mangum of PuttingZone.com. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Fred. How are you? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you were recommended highly. Jeff Mangum told me all about you, and I checked your website out and thought I would pursue the conversation. And going through your website, I not only noticed Jeff, who's been on the Golf Smarter podcast, but Carrie Mumford was also listed as one of the links on your website. You like his work too, huh?
Yes, I do. I really do. He makes it simple, and I like his simplicity, and it's not just the how do you get along with your parents type of deal. You know, I mean, there's an actual structure there where he's got that 32 ball drill and
yep.
and so forth and so on, but how I feel about the mental game, other than Carrie, would be I don't know why anybody would really, and I have nothing against mental gurus, but if I wanted to learn something, even in life, or if I wanted to learn acting or anything like that, I think I would rather go to the top actors or like we're talking about golf. I would go to Nicklaus, I would go to Palmer, I would go to Trevino, and I would ask them, how do you prepare? Well, what was your thought? I think Hogan, but the secret what Hogan was, I think, is mental preparation. I think. I mean, there's nothing. I don't think mechanically that this player's out there now that hit the ball as good as Hogan, but I think his mental approach. And that's something that you have to get from them guys. What were you thinking about? What do you think about when you're playing? I think he had something to do with an invisible wall in back of him that every time he moved up, the wall moved up. I didn't quite get that whole. I read it someplace, but I don't remember. It's been a while since I did that, but I think that. Study. It's almost like neuro-linguistic programming, where you find people that are great, and you find out what they do, and you try to have people replicate that, that's what I feel about the game. I would, as a matter of fact, if a kid wasn't suited for college, I would say, you want to build yo-yos, let's find out who builds the best yo-yos, and let's talk with them, let's spend some time with them. I think that's where. The mental approach would be for me.
I think you just gave me a great idea for a new podcast. We're going to do the Yo-Yo Smarter podcast.
There you go.
There's got to be a huge audience for that, just like golf, don't you think?
Absolutely.
What about people who have expectations about how they play? I mean, I'll receive emails, and I'm sure you've talked to people who they'll start playing the game, in mid or later life. And within 2 months, they're shooting in the 80s, which is absolutely amazing to me, because I've played with people who, and I'm sure you've worked with people, who've been playing for years and struggle breaking 100. How do you let people know, you're really going to be at best a mid-90s player, or you can be a scratch golfer, or can anybody be a scratch golfer?
Well, absolutely.
And we're not talking about people who are planning on being on the tour someday. We're talking about the 98% of the rest of the world who are playing golf.
Right, right. Well, I feel that, I mean, that's where I kind of pride myself is. I research this golf swing and the mental approach and stuff like that. I mean, until the cows come home, I'm up to 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I think that that anybody can reach a certain level based upon, you have to find out what their learning styles are and stuff like, things like that. But I lost my train of thought there for a minute, but there's preparation, a certain, you have to be a realist. And I think you have to get into, if you want to get to a next level, I think you have to feel like the next level. I think you have to act like the next level. Do things like a good player. Study a good player, how he dresses, what equipment he uses, what kind of training method. I think that's how you would become better at things. And the willingness to seek a good instructor and kind of buy into what he's saying. I mean, do your homework and really work on it and not try to, try to understand it first and just do it until you can do it. That's why I like Nike's logo there. Just do it, I think I got away from that a little bit of what you're trying to get. I had something, but I lost my train, but...
We got derailed just slightly, huh?
Yeah, I got derailed a little bit.
But I'm, your comment about just act like it or feel like it, I'm not grasping here. I mean, I would love to be able to slam dunk a basketball, but I'm not going to be able to look like Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But what I meant by that is study what these people actually do. Try to study what they do versus, listen, 1% of the people who are great, that 1% are obviously doing something different than the 99% of the other players. So if you really study what they do, naturally, you may not have the same talents, but you could come close to close to doing things that they do. And and I think a good instructor's got to be able to recognize talent, got to be able to work with that talent. It's something that you learn to do by teaching a lot. I think that's why when I started teaching, I got on a busy, which was certified by the PGA to teach. It was a double-tier driving range. And, I was giving lessons constantly from 8 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. We had lights. And after a while, you're able to judge talent. So I would seek out somebody like that versus a young kid or somebody at a country club that really doesn't have that experience. But that's the prerequisite is to find a coach that can work with you
Do you have any recommendations on how to find a quality instructor?
Absolutely. To find a quality instructor, the first thing you have to understand is many ways to play this game. There really isn't a wrong way, but there is a better way. I mean, there is geometry is involved. There's certain ways that you could move a golf ball, power a golf ball. You can either hit it or swing at it, use centrifugal force or hit at it. But there are definite basic things that, the club has to be on plane. Doesn't have to come off plane, but then you have to get it back on again. But so if you find someone that's knowledgeable about biomechanics, how the body's designed to function. That's why I got to laugh how even myself years ago, how you fall for the secret to the golf swing. Well, you got 13 joints moving all the time. How the hell could there be a secret? they function in a certain way. I mean, you know, they're sequenced. They can only do function in a certain way. And I believe that somebody who hasn't played golf at some point in their life has made every motion, every proper motion in a golf swing. For instance, if you were to clap, clapping in the audience, you were part of the audience. I mean, that's the way you would take your club back. I mean, you wouldn't, the function of clapping would be like, you know, like kind of a first move away with your right arm and stuff like that. So you make it simple, but I think the instructor has to go through all the, I think he has to know all the models. To be a good instructor, I've been through the golfing machine. I've been through Morad, Mac O'Grady stuff. I've been a stack and tilt, which is a, the stack and tilt is the one that's in vogue now, and that's Mike Bennett and Andy Plummer, who are friends of mine, and DJ Haddix and all these guys. It's a variation. Not to get technical, but Mac has studied the swing, and there's a centrifugal force swing, which is sort of like when you hook a ball, and then there's a what he calls a centripetal swing, where you kind of cut the ball. But there's different miles, different heights that you can hit golf balls. And I think an instructor has to know all that to be a good instructor. He doesn't necessarily have to teach that and be technical, but water it down and simplify it and give it. But know every model. I mean, I pride myself, what does Mo Norman do? What did he do? What does Ledbetter teach? What does, all the great teachers, what do they teach? I mean, a lot of times when you look at the forum, all these forums, they're knocking various methods. They don't even know what the method is. I mean, the stack and tilt thing, bad on the back. It's not bad on the back. Mike Weir is with the stack and tilt guys, and his back got better. He had a bad back. So they don't know what they're talking about because they don't really know what's involved. It looks like a reverse pivot, but it's not. So anyways, I'm ranting away here.
Yeah, you are, Bob, and I'm fascinated because you've yet to answer one of my questions, but you keep going. But let me keep throwing out questions and see where we go.
Sure. I mean, you can stop me at any time.
Oh, no, this is really interesting.
I just love to talk, what I mean?
But who knows, by the last question you may answer the first one. But let's see what happens.
Okay.
Now I don't even know where to go.
Oh boy, this will probably be your weirdest interview.
Well, maybe we'll put it on Christmas Eve, and by the time you're finished, something will come down the chimney.
Probably one of the stack and tilt guys, but go ahead.
Okay, let's try this. On your website, you have Swing Plane Made Easy. Go ahead. Make it easy. Is it really easy? Can it
very
be done?
Easy. Very easy.
No, wait. Before you go there, what I want is... No, and you keep making me forget what I was going to ask. I almost had it there. No, go. Let's do Swing Plane Made Easy. I'll make notes.
Sure. Swing Plane, you want to know about Swing Plane?
Yes, I do.
Okay, when you're set up to the golf ball, the end of the club is behind the ball, right?
I'm going to stand up for this, if you don't mind. Okay. I'm going to stand up and grab my club. I keep a club here next to me just in case you tell me to. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so let's say we got a laser beam out, coming through the head, right, and coming out through the butt of the club, right? Laser beam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the club head basically starts on the plane line, right? And if you trace... If when you take the club back and keep the beam of light on the target line, it keeps going down this target line until the club shaft gets parallel to the target line itself. You got that picture?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now when you take it up, the butt end of the club is picking up that line way down to the left.
Right.
So you take it up, keeping the butt end of the club, the laser coming out of the butt end of the club on the target line. and you follow that town, that the butt end of the club follows that target line down until you get to the top of your swing, which is parallel. But I have to stop there now because the vogue now is a short-to-short swing. It's not really getting the club up at the top of the swing where it's parallel to the ground and target line. It's actually, at the top of the swing is actually sort of like at 45 degrees from vertical and parallel to the ground now. It's kind of a short-to-short swing now. The finish is really not a wraparound finish. But in simple terms, when neither end of the club is pointing to the target line, the club has to be parallel to it. Another picture would be standing in the attic of a house. Okay, you're popped out through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the gutter would be the target line, would be the target line, right? Now the club is in the target line, right?
Okay. Where are you going with this,
okay,
buddy?
Well, you're standing through the roof, and you got the the shaft flat up against the roof, and the head is in the gutter.
Okay.
So all you do is stay on that roof of the house.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever angle the club started at, it has to stay on that angle to the top of the swing. You don't change that angle. But there's guys who do that. They'll come up and change that angle, but then they have to lay it off. In other words, drop the head of the club towards the ground to get it back to that angle again, which is a step that you really don't need in there. Now, do you understand that?
Yeah, I'm with you here.
Yeah. So
I like the house thing. We're back up to the chimney again, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, that's as simple as it gets. So the club is either on or off plane. And an interesting thing is that if I had 25 students, new students today, come to me and I said, can you tell me, if you stopped at any point in your golf swing, can you tell me if it's on or off plane? And you know that the 25 don't even know what I'm talking about. Now, that is a crime. With golf being as old as it is and all this teaching being done, they don't even know that.
Well, but you're saying they're brand new students. Why would they know that?
Yeah, No. But I'm talking about brand new to the point where they've been playing, brand new to me.
I see, okay.
I should clarify that. Brand new to me. They've been playing for years. And they just simply, that simple little thing, I mean, just right there you can help somebody huge. Just by, explaining that swing plane.
But now, let's just say I've had one instructor for a while, and I kind of petered out with him, but I'm coming to you, and I say, my last instructor talked about a two-plane swing all the time.
Right.
And you're going to say what?
In other words, like you're talking about single plane versus double plane.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, well, that simply means that the shoulders are turning on a flatter plane, and the shaft is vertical, okay? The shoulders turn flat, and the shaft is vertical, whereas the one-planer, the shoulder is turning. The shaft and the shoulders would basically parallel one another at a halfway position, okay? Let's say you're halfway into your golf swing, a three-quarter swing,
mm-hmm.
Okay? A two-planer would have the shoulders kind of like flat with the shaft. Let's go to an extreme. Let's say the shoulders were parallel to the ground and the shaft was straight up in the air. Okay? That would be like a two-plane golf swing.
Yeah.
Now, the one-plane golf swing would have your shoulder pointing to the target line and the butt of the club pointing to the target line, whereas if you looked in the mirror to your right, the shoulders and the shaft would be on the same plane. Got that picture?
Yep.
That would be a single plane golf swing. So it's all on the same plane.
Okay.
Shoulders would turn deeper, steeper rather, and on the double plane would turn more flat.
All right. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I recently received an email from a listener, a guy named Jim Chesbro, who said he heard about a study that was done that showed that really good athletes' brains treat their tools of the trade, like a golf club, as if it was an actual part of their body.
Mm-hmm.
The brain treats the club the same way it treats the hand, type of thing, and it recognizes the brain recognizes the club as it is part of the body and not something separate. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not quite sure I really understand that. I'm trying to understand that. But
it's just an extension of their body. They're so comfortable with a golf club in their hand, golfers, that it's as if they can make the head of the club do as if it was their fingers in itself, as if they can reach down, pick the ball, and throw it exactly where they wanted to, that they can do that with a golf club as if it's just an extension of their body. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I would think that they would have to. It's like these guys that say that they're, you know, I'm self-taught. Well, you would have had to seen somebody hit a golf ball to actually hit one yourself. You just don't pick up a golf club and you know you would have to see something. So I don't really buy into that because okay. you do play with other people and you watch other people what they do. So that's a way of learning visually.
Yeah,
somebody visually learns that way. You know.
Okay.
Other people you have to explain things to.
Let's talk about putting. I want to get a couple tips out of you if we possibly can. You've done some work with Jeff Mangum.
Right.
And you appreciate his work, and you even told me before we started recording that you wish you would have known more about Jeff's stuff when you started teaching.
Absolutely, sure.
Let's go over that, because the short game is really where the strokes are made up. That's where the great scoring is done, correct?
Absolutely.
What do you find to be a common mistake for people who have not had proper instruction?
Taking a club straight back and straight through, you hear a lot, right?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it really doesn't, because for instance, if you hold the putter in the middle of you, cutting yourself in half, straight up and down, cutting yourself right in half, right up through your nose and between your eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's the center of your body, which is acting as the point for the pendulum, right?
Right.
So basically, when you rock your shoulder down towards your instep to take, that putter comes up off the ground immediately, right? So basically, the putting stroke is a perfect circle. So it's not straight back and straight through, okay? So you use the center of your body as the point where the pendulum moves, right? That's the fixed point, right? And you place the ball slightly ahead of a low point where that putter's on the ground. That's a low point, all right? You want to hit the putt. You want to hit the ball slightly on the upswing. So you move the ball. You address the putter about a couple inches behind the ball. So when you reach bottom, the other half of the circle is coming up and hitting the ball, which gives it overspin. So that's what I used to try to do, too. Take it straight back and straight through, but it's a perfect circle. So when the left shoulder goes down, the putter comes up immediately. And then when you drop it, you just let it drop, but you got to right it up on the other side with the left shoulder going straight up. And that makes a perfect circle. There's no such thing as taking it straight back and straight through. In ball position, people have the ball position should be as I just explained. When the putter's in the middle of your body, there, the ball's a couple inches in front. A lot of people have it too far forward, which they hit too much of the top of the ball, or they have it too far back, which they're hitting down on it, which makes it bounce. So. That's a vital thing in putting.
We frequently hear about PGA, position grip alignment, when you're addressing the ball on a full swing. Is that relevant? Is that the same thing to consider when you're putting? Position grip and alignment?
Yeah.
Is that
just as
important?
Yeah, absolutely. But in the golf swing, it depends on what kind of shot you're going to hit. So the ball position is going to vary, right? In putting, you need to hit slightly up at it to give it overspin. So that's going to be constant all the time. And that ball position, once you get your setup like that, that should be a constant thing. That should be where your ball position is positioned every time.
So the ball, you basically on a putt, you're going to want to hit the ball straight no matter what. You just have to align
right.
your body
exactly.
where But with on a full golf swing, you're not necessarily going to do that. You might want to shape your shot if you even know how the hell to do that.
That's right. Absolutely. Sure. And that's easy too. But you're always hitting a straight putt. There's never what a person has to do is he has to take once he. In other words, there's a thing about finding the top of the fall line. Okay, it's basically this: finding the fall line is basically if you. Position yourself, try to find the high side of the hole, the high side of the green, and position yourself on the low side about 3 feet, and you walk around until you can do a push-up over that hole, all right? If you can, with your hands being even, I don't know if you can visualize this now. So if I walked around and I did a push-up over that hole, my hands would be even, not one higher than the other, okay? So if I'm on the low side and able to do that, that means that's a relatively straight putt, okay? And that line would extend up, you know, to the right up through the hole up to the high side. Now, just above that hole is where every putt will fall in. That's called the top of the fall line. So let's say you're to the right of that, and you visualize that coming out of the hole to where your ball is. So, you know, this is tough to explain, but the way Jeff has it too on his website is you try to hit try to find out where you're hitting the straight to the fall line, but it's on a tangent. You're hitting it on the tangent of the circle there. And this is a little technical. Probably the amateurs are not going to understand this, but basically you find the top. And every putt is a straight putt on the tangent of the curve to stop right at the fall line. You have to stop the putt at the fall line, and it falls in. It'll fall in. Too much speed, obviously, it's not going to go in. Not enough speed is going to break downhill or what have you. But it's all about stopping a putt, not 17 inches by, 13 inches by. Or anything like that, but it's about stopping it on the fall line. Once you find a fall line, you stop it on it, and it falls in. For more clarification on that, go to Jeff's website, and he has that whole thing on there.
And that's puttingzone.com.
Puttingzone.com, exactly right.
What's your favorite drill? Give us, before we go, give us your favorite drill for working on your speed, your putting speed.
Favorite drill?
Yes, sir.
One potato, two.
Okay, thanks so much. That was really wonderful. What are you talking about? What is one potato and two?
Well, it's that's the tempo that you should have on every putt, and try to make the backswing and the follow through the same length. And if you have the same tempo, you know, one potato, two through the ball. All you have to do is vary the length of the backswing and follow through for length of putts. And what I would advise people to do would get on the green and putt towards the edges of the green and try to come as close to the green, edge of the green, without going off. And you know what? How to judge that is basically back off a putt and kind of, you know, take it back one potato, two. And it's kind of instinctive. It's like throwing a ball to somebody. You wouldn't throw it too soft or too hard. But try to back off and, say you got a 3-foot putt and you took it back 12 feet, and well, that's not going to make it. You know, you keep working it back and forth until you have that with that tempo, and it'll be very, very consistent that way. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
well, let me try to clarify it. One potato is the backswing, two is the forward motion.
Yeah, one potato, two. You drop it and right it up with the right shoulder.
That's okay, and right. So you're varying the speed of your backswing depending on the distance of the putt.
The tempo would always be the same, right. The length will get you the distance. The length coming back.
But your tempo is obviously going to change if you've got a 30-foot putt versus a 3-foot putt. The speed with which you bring it back.
No, always the same. If I have a 1-inch putt, I'm going to go one potato, two. That's why people miss those little short, like, 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah, well, they're freaking out.
Yeah, but they jab at it. But I promise you, if you go one potato, two, right, always have that same tempo, the length is going to be varied by how far you take the putter back and through, but it's always the same tempo. Always.
So you should, when you say one potato, two, you're going to say it at the same speed no matter how far your putt is.
Absolutely.
One potato, two.
If you
have to bring the club back another, like 3 feet versus 6 inches,
right.
your putter head's going to be going at a faster rate, isn't it? Even though you're saying one potato, two.
No, gravity's gravity. You let the putter fall down. It's gravity's gravity.
You're not pushing.
It just has more slap to it because it's higher.
I see.
It has more force.
Interesting.
If you go 60, let's say I'm over here. I'm looking at a mall here. I'm across the street. If I want to go there, I'm going to go one potato. I'm going to really take it up high. One potato, two. It's going to be, it's going to get it there. And then if I get a 2-inch putt, it's still one potato, two. It's always the same tempo. Always the same tempo. You just vary the length of the backswing and follow to. That's all.
Hey, Bob, this has been very entertaining. Thanks. Do you remember what the first question was?
No, I don't.
It's all right. You couldn't remember after I asked it, so you just kept going anyway. Your website is B Montello. It's MONTELLO, right? bmontello.net.ms.
Right, exactly.
As in Microsoft or Mississippi.
That's right.
But it's neither of those things. And you are a teaching pro at the Woodlake Country Club in Vast, North Carolina, right near Pinehurst, huh?
That's right. 20 minutes from Pinehurst. Right?
You sound like you're local for Pinehurst.
Yeah, pardon? Well, I work with a lot of PGMs over there, too. A lot of PGMs work with me on their golf swing. PGMs are students that are going to, like, Ferris or Campbell or Methodist to become golf professionals.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for explaining that. I had no idea what a PGM was.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Right.
Yeah, so that's,
So is golf in North Carolina that good?
You know what? I'll tell you what. You know what's good? Westchester County in New York.
Get a dog and a beer and a.
don't forget, you have Wingfoot up there. You have Westchester Country Club. You've
been spoiled, buddy.
Absolutely, let me tell you, I have been.
Good for you. Well, we have too. Really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much for spending time with us on the Golf Smarter Podcast.
I hope there's some value to it.
Oh, there's plenty.
Thank you, man.
Well, it's time to ask Kenny. Do you need informed answers about specific golf gear or have questions about what to look for when buying new golf products? Kenny Mickelson, technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com and star of Nick's Picks, is here to help. To submit your question, go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the tab labeled Ask Kenny. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, America's golf club. Kenny, we have an announcement to make before we even begin, don't we?
I think we do.
This is the final episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast that you will be appearing on because, this isn't all bad news, you will be a regular feature, as you always have been, on Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. We are moving Ask Kenny because we get so many questions that we have to avoid that we're going to take Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf and turn that into Ask Kenny, and we'll be doing more questions with every episode, which is very good news.
It'll be a great opportunity for us to answer more questions.
I think so. Now, the only caveat to all this is that we're going to be doing Golf Better every other week. So the next episode will be published on the 7th, I think that is. We'll be publishing on Thursdays, as we always have, with Golf Better. But we're going to do it every other week. So we will be taking questions all the time, and we will be covering more questions. And we are still going to have manufacturers on.
That is correct. We are definitely going to have manufacturers be a part of that program as well, but still be able to tie in the Ask Kenny questions.
Yeah. And maybe even ask some of the Ask Kenny questions we can ask directly to the manufacturers. But do you have any idea of what manufacturers we have to look forward to for 2008 to talk to?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to obviously have you know, some of the bigger manufacturers, Ping, Nike, Callaway,
awesome.
Titleist, Cobra, all the big ones. Also, we're going to do U.S. Kids. We're going to do another show on GPS systems and rangefinders.
Cool.
We were a little one-sided on one of the programs we did, and we wanted to get a few more manufacturers out there and promote their products as well. And it's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. And so everything is going to – the big news about this is that we're just like shortening the length of Golf Smarter, because a lot of people have commented that it's difficult to listen to a 50-minute show. But – it's okay, because everything's about 30 minutes, and then, of course, Golf Smarter Tips will be at 5 minutes each, and we'll do that a couple times each week. But it's time to get to some of the questions, because, like I said, we get too many, and we can't cover all of them, so I want to do a little bit more than we usually do, and we'll start with a question from Chad Devine, who writes from Hamilton, Ontario. He said he received the Olivia from Yes Putters, which he had his eye on for a long time, and he got it as a Christmas gift. And because he's in Ontario, he's putting on carpets right now, but he'd like to know, to feel a little more comfortable, he thinks it would be better for him to have it a bit shorter. Will chopping down the putter affect it in any way?
Yeah, I mean, it affects the dynamics, obviously, with the swing weight, but I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm 6 foot tall, and I take a standard putter, typically that you get off the rack, 35 inches, which Scotty Cameron, you know, at one time you could only get standard length putters, 35 inch. Now you can get them in different lengths. But, and the first thing I do is cut it down to about 32 and a half inches. So I like my putter to be real short. I like for my arms to hang. It gives me more of a pendulum effect. And I don't worry about the, you know, the weight. It still feels fine to me. You know, there's some fanatics out there where, you know, a few grams are going to make a difference. To me personally, it didn't make a big difference at all. So I'm a big fan of having a putter that fits your putting style. You know, some people stand straight up and use a little bit longer putter. I like to bend over just a little bit and let my arms hang. So I definitely need one that's a little bit shorter.
I was thinking about this actually the other day, because you've mentioned that before, that you like a short putter. But, you know, some people, their physiology is a bit different than one another. Some people have a short torso and long legs, and some people have short legs and a long torso. Where do you fall on that as a 6 footer? What like your pant legs when you buy a pair of Levi's or something?
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm 32 inch on the inseam, so I would think that my torso is a little longer and my legs are a little bit shorter.
Oh, that's interesting. So that may be why you have a shorter putter, because you have to bend over farther because you're mostly torso.
Correct. So, I mean, everybody's different body stature. So, definitely get it to where you want it, putter length. I mean, it's obviously the club that you're going to use the most in your bag, and the goal is to try to not use it as much. So, you know, we need to get it fit right. You know, that's one club you don't want to be touching that often.
Well, in the interview we just concluded, you heard Bob talk about how many putts you should have in a round, which I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to get it to that number and feel comfortable. But anyway.
What was his answer?
Oh, he thinks that that you should be at 32 putts per round.
That's a realistic goal, though.
Yeah. Yeah, is it what the pros are at, what, 28, 27, something like that on tour?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always thought, hey, if I can walk away with 36 putts, I'm doing okay. And he's like, no. It's like, oh, you're just going to have to hear the show. All right, our next question comes from John Cooper from Jenks, Oklahoma. And interestingly enough, John is 6'7". And he has the Ping i10 irons that have been custom fitted, of course. And he hits his irons really well, but has always struggled with his driver. He has a TaylorMade R7 and a Nike Sasquatch driver, but with stock shafts. Would it be more beneficial to get one of these drivers reshafted, with custom fitting, of course, or buy a new driver with a measured shaft? He also feels like he doesn't get the distance that he should, based on using a regular length shaft, especially because his 3-iron is approximately 2¾ inches extended. What do you say?
I mean, obviously the less expensive avenue is just going to be to have the club reshafted. Well, I think what he's referring to as far as getting a new driver and having it cut to length, what he needs, he definitely, if he's using a stock shaft, say 45 inches, in most drivers, and he's 6'7". He's not taking advantage of his body size. He's definitely going to be able to lengthen the shaft, and in essence, he's not going to have to change his swing that much and be able to generate more club head speed, as long as the main thing there is being trying to stay consistent. Anytime you lengthen a shaft, you can get a little bit more erratic with it. So, but at 6'7", a standard length driver doesn't fit him correct. He's having to do different things to his stance to be able to use the driver, whether he's bending over or bending his knees or whatever he's having to do. And to get one that was custom fit to his size is going to give him a better swing characteristic, as well as probably give him some added length that he's looking for.
There you go, and hopefully his head is in equal proportion to his body and the hat will fit that we send him. They're
crazy.
Adjustable hats. All right, John, so we will be sending you a hat. People are starting to think about their golf travel for the upcoming year, and one of the things that makes everybody kind of curious about what to do, and Michael Morrow of Roswell, Georgia, he wrote to us and said that as a new golfer, he's just started to contemplate longer distance golf trips and is struck by the variety of golf travel bags that are available, plus the range of prices and options. And he just wants some tips on what he should do. Do you have any suggestions about a golf travel bag?
There are a couple out there. The number one thing you want to look at is whether or not they're approved by airlines,
right? Of course.
Which that's probably the most important thing to look at, and then you have to determine what are you looking for—a hard side or a soft side. I'm a proponent of soft side, just because they fit in the trunk of your car a little bit easier. You can stuff
not
a
rental
few
cars.
More True. Well, you take that long driver out, it would fit. But
yeah, well,
you can stuff a few more things in there, i.e., golf shoes or rainwear or whatever you might want to take extra that you don't need to put in your luggage. And there are a couple brands out there. Club Glove is probably one of the most used by the PGA Tour. OGO makes the Monster Travel Bag, which I think you have, that is phenomenal. It has four wheels on the bottom instead of just two, so you can kind of push it when you're waiting in line instead of having to hold the handle and drag it with you. So that
I'll testify to that. I'm really excited about that. I'm taking a trip down to Phoenix this week, actually. But what's so interesting is the times that I have had to walk from the shuttle bus to the check-in counter at the airport, pulling a bag that only has two wheels and a golf cart really puts a lot of pressure on your arm and shoulder. And the fact that this OGO travel bag has the four wheels so you can just kind of push it if you need to is, I think, a phenomenal idea. I'm very excited about this. And this monster bag has place to put some clothes. So if I can take a weekend's worth of clothes, put it all in this bag, stuff it around the corners and put the shoes in and extra stuff and the toiletries, and I don't have to carry an extra suitcase. I'm really excited.
Yeah, so I mean, so you see the advantages to one.
Well, I've gone through four of them, so four different travel bags.
Hey, I mean, travel bags is one of those things where, what's the old saying? You know, you get what you pay for.
Oh, absolutely.
If you go the cheaper route, obviously it's going to last you a few times. But the way that the airline baggage handlers handle bags, sometimes you want something that's going to have a lifetime warranty to it. And they do. Some of the more expensive ones have a lifetime guarantee with them. So, when you think about that, if you're a frequent traveler, that is in itself worth, a pretty big value to you.
Absolutely. And if it all helps, of course, you can get 10% off and free shipping because you're a Golf Smarter and Golf Better listener, and you can get your discount from Edwin Watts Golf, and they'll ship it to you. It's the best way to go. Do your research. Yeah, go. You know, do your research at a local store. Play with all the bags, see which one you like, and then go shop online and buy it at Edwin Watts Golf. Get your discount, get your free shipping. You'll save a lot more money. You won't even pay sales tax. All right. Well, I hope I hope that answers your question. Last one we're going to do today, Kenny, is from Randy Butler, who writes from Las Vegas, Nevada, and he says the extra variables of bounce and loft add dimension to choosing the proper sand wedge for my set. How can I determine the proper loft and bounce for my swing and trap conditions? Again, he's in Vegas, so the trap conditions there may be different than other parts of the country, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The number one thing you want to look at when we talk about bounce, the softer the fairways or the bunkers, like us in Florida where we use white beach sand, a lot of our bunkers, and it's very soft, you want to get a wedge that has the maximum bounce to it. A wedge that has very little bounce will dig into hard soil a lot easier. So if you're using that wedge in a soft bunker, obviously it's going to dig in way too easy, and the tendency to hit the ball a little bit fat in those bunkers is going to be there. So adding bounce to that golf club helps the club not dig in so much. So in Vegas, he's obviously, they're saying it's a little bit more compact. He might want to look at a wedge that has a little bit less bounce. And then when you're talking about loft, you just need to figure out what void you're trying to fill there. If you're hitting your pitching wedge 110 yards, and then you're hitting your sand wedge, let's say 80 yards, you have a large gap there. You might need to de-loft your sand wedge a couple of degrees to be able to fill that gap, which is something that can be done at any club fitting shop. They have a loft and lie machine. You can just adjust the lie so you don't have to go buy a brand new golf club. And little things that you can do to help out with loft, but bounce is the key factor there. If you're in a compact or hard soil, go with less bounce. If you're in a real soft fairway, real soft bunkers, you want to go with more bounce. So good question there.
And a good answer. Excellent. Great education. Thank you, Kenny. Okay, let's move on to, that's enough questions for today because we have to give something away. We are doing a drawing for the Step to Swing Trainer. And over the last couple of weeks, we have received 192 entries. I have sorted them randomly and would appreciate if you can pick a number between 1 and 192 so we can name our winner of the Step to Swing Swing Aid.
I mean, it's trying to think of a number that might. I'm going to go with 8. A number popped into my head, so.
All right. Well, let's see here. That goes to Becca Bain in St. Louis, Missouri. Well, Becca, let me just tell you that you can share this with William. My guess is that you are at the same address since you're both in St. Louis, and you guys have to share it. And if you want to use it, Becca, William has to ask permission, and you get first dibs on it every time. All right. Now, here's what's going to happen. We are going to continue to give away great prizes and great product through Edwin Watts Golf, and we truly appreciate that. We're going to be doing the giveaways now on Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. I'll give you updates on Golf Smarter on what we're going to be giving away, but if you want to hear the drawing, you want to hear Kenny describe the product, you're going to need to do that on the next episodes of the upcoming episodes of Golf Better, so that every time we do an episode, there will be a giveaway since we're doing that every 2 weeks. So our next giveaway is going to be held on February 21st. Now, that's going to be 2 episodes later from now, and that's because, Kenny, you wanted to give something special away.
Correct. I figured we'd try to throw a bone out there to get everybody to switch over to Golf Better and listen to the Ask Kenny and some of the manufacturers. So I have a tailor-made burner driver, loft and flex, and hand preference, your choice. So it's going to be a great giveaway.
So if you heard our 2007 year in review with Matt and Eric a couple episodes ago of Golf Better, they both talked about how these tailor-made burner drivers were huge hits for 2007. That of everything we talked about with the high MOI and the new geometry, that people just love the tailor-made drivers. So we're going to give one away. I think that's awesome. Thank you.
Now, you're welcome. Glad to do it.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm glad that you are, because I'm going to keep bugging you for this stuff. Now, if you'd like to enter to win this tailor-made burner driver, we're going to keep things the same here. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest. Once you're there, just fill out the shipping information and the verification code and click submit. It's as simple as that. All right, Kenny. Well, thanks so much, buddy. And go ahead. Your pick for the Super Bowl. Let's do it.
I mean, it's a no-brainer for me, New England. New York's the underdog coming all the way through the playoffs and the regular season. New England, basically manhandled them. So, I'd like to see the underdog win, but, man, New England is tough. They are very strong. They're not undefeated for a reason.
Exactly. And I think I'm torn. It's like, yeah, you want to see the underdog, but yeah, you want to see a perfect season. I mean, this could be the greatest season in the history of football, but we're talking about golf. Boy, wasn't Tiger great this weekend?
Phenomenal.
Oh, man, he owns that course, and they're going back to it again for the Open this year. It's going to be amazing. All right, buddy, we'll talk to you later.
All right, Fred. Take care. Thanks a million.
And thanks again to Bob Montello for joining us today. Again, his website is bmontello, MONTELLO.net.ms. Many of you have written to say how much you've been enjoying Mark Frost's latest book, The Match, and how much you enjoyed the podcast as well. Seems like it's been tough to find if you're going to your library, so the best way to purchase the book is right at our website, golfsmarterpodcast.com. Click on the tab labeled Smarter Shopping. And just to make your life easier, any book that's ever been covered on any of the podcasts at smarterpodcasts.com, it can be found on our Smarter Shopping area. And those cover all the books in Golf Smarter, Golf Smarter Tips, Good Dog, and a new podcast that we'll be launching this week. We'd love for you to check it out. We'll be playing a promo for it at the end about guide dogs. Really interesting. We've also spent a lot of time making it easier for you to navigate your way around the website. Check it out and let me know what you think. And our Golf Smarter blog, also you can listen to the podcast episodes right there for all of our golf podcasts. Get a sense of what we're going to be talking about in the upcoming episode. Find out if you are the winner of our giveaways. But we'll also, tomorrow, we're going to be posting a very funny video that's been going around the world via emails. And if you haven't seen this one, it's a golf instruction video. It's a classic. You got to check it out at the Golf Smarter blog. Clearly, you understand the value of podcasts, and that's why you listen. They're educational, hopefully they're a bit entertaining, and they're there when you are ready to listen. If you have a company, a product, or a service that can benefit from the fastest-growing form of new media, can I help you get the message out? SmarterPodcasts.com is our company, and we've been producing audio content and programming long before they were known as podcasts. If this is at all intriguing to you, please write to me. Just click on the Hey Fred tab at golfsmarterpodcast.com. On our next installment of Golf Smarter, we'll talk more about putting and putters with Todd Soans. Todd has a custom putter company called Couture Golf, and he runs the Impact Golf Schools. Plus, he's going to give away a custom-made putter to one of our listeners. As we continue to discuss whether the Patriots are the greatest football team ever, or if Tiger is the greatest golfer ever, Jesse Ng writes in this week's quote from Muhammad Ali, who said on multiple occasions that he was the greatest. Well, he once was asked about his golf game, and he responded with, "I'm the best. I just haven't played yet." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on that Hey Fred tab at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
I always tell people two of the most important tools on the puppy truck are Kleenex, because we cry right along with the raisers who are giving their dogs back, and of course, poop bags.
I was shocked to learn how many people and how many hours go into the creation of a guide dog.
You know, the interesting thing about being a dog trainer at Guide Dogs is that you not only have to be a world-class dog trainer, but you also have to be a world-class teacher.
It's not just about companionship. Guide dogs make judgments every day to keep their blind partners safe.
I really got to give credit to Guide Dogs for the Blind for saving her life.
I cannot imagine my life without my guide dog.
I'm Joanne Green, host of the Good Dog Podcast. Join me for an incredible journey on the Guide Dog Podcast. Subscribe for free on iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.